This is Jim Inkster. It's always a pleasure to visit with Brad Meltzer. He is perhaps the most versatile writer in the history of mankind. His books have appeared on the bestseller list for fiction, nonfiction, advice, children's books. He has had quite a career, and he's responsible, as we know, for helping find the missing 9/11 flag that the firefighters raised at Ground Zero at the World Trade Center. He is a man who knows the world, and he has a reverence for people who are in our world, and particularly great Americans. And he's back again with, I am Walt Disney, I am Marie Curie. Now, two diverse people, and these biographical targets that you have showcased have resulted in more than 3 million copies being sold about the likes of Abraham Lincoln, Rosa Parks, Martin Luther King, Neil Armstrong, and others. Why the current two, Brad Meltzer?
Well, as you know, Jim, I started this series because I wanted to give my kids better heroes to look up to, better than the Instagram, you know, influencers they can see or people who are famous or being famous. And I want them to see people of character, of kindness, of compassion, and of perseverance. And that's where these two new books come from, is that perseverance part. Walt Disney is, the first book is I Am Walt Disney, is known always as kind of great American dream, right? That's what Disney World is. It's the happiest place on earth. But it wasn't always easy for him. When he was a little kid, his father wasn't so thrilled that he was drawing. It was his aunt who was the one who said, you should keep doing that drawing thing. And in fact, his first studio is an utter failure. He winds up, they say, you're going to go bankrupt. Sleeps in his office every night. He has to take a shower once a week in the local train station. And I want my kids to know that it's okay to fail, that's how you eventually fly. And that's what I Am Walt Disney is all about, is giving kids that lesson.
And Walt Disney is accompanied by another great American, and one that perhaps is not as well known because she was not around as late as Walt Disney, who founded Disneyland in the 1950s. What about Marie Curie?
Yeah, you know, Marie Curie is this amazing Nobel Prize-winning scientist, and I wanted my kids, of course, to see a female scientist, but I also wanted them to see how she did it, because when she was a little girl, the Russian government, where she grew up, wouldn't teach science to girls. They said, you can't teach science to girls. It'll make them too powerful. And you know what? They were right, and it's wonderful that it made her so powerful. She couldn't even go when she decided to be a scientist at 16 years old, because she loves math so much. She tries to go to university, to college, but there are no colleges that will teach girls science. So she finds a college called the Flying University that illegally teaches science to girls, and it unlocks everything in her. She becomes the first woman to win the Nobel Prize, the first man or woman, first person to win two Nobel Prizes in two different subjects. And again, my favorite scene in the book is one where she's mixing chemicals together and it blows up in her face, and then another one blows up in her face, and another blows up in her face. She keeps going, because the thing is throughout her life, everyone tells Marie Curie that because you're a girl, you can't do it, but she never lets it stop her. And I want my daughter, I want my sons to have those lessons as well.
Well, I mentioned Walt Disney. In the 1950s, the brand Disney was not what it is, but he was a visionary, wasn't he? He anticipated what might happen and ultimately did.
Yeah, he was wonderful at that. And even the story of he decides to come up with a cartoon mouse, and he says, I'm going to name it Mickey. I'm going to name it Mortimer, he says, and instead of Mickey. And his wife says, Mortimer? That's a terrible name. That's literally what she says. She says, that's a terrible name. Why don't you name him Mickey? And that's how the world gets Mickey Mouse. It's because of, you know, it's not, and the first Mickey cartoon doesn't sell, but what he anticipates is technology. He anticipates, in fact, we get Disney World because he was sitting at a merry-go-round with his daughters, and his daughters loved the merry-go-round in this local amusement park. But he'd look around and say, there's no fun for the parents here. There's nothing the whole family can do together. And he starts studying amusement parks. He studies Gettysburg, historical sites that people love to go to, and he starts building this place that resembles his hometown in Missouri. That used to, just like his hometown, had a train running down the center. So we all see Disneyland and we all see Disney World, but what Walt Disney was finding was his happy place, where he grew up, a simple town where things were much easier. And I think it's true, you know, every book, the I Am series, is, you know, they're illustrated biographies for little kids, but every book is not about history, it's about a value, it's about character. And for Walt Disney, it's that belief that your happy place, all you got to do is think of it, it's always inside you. That's what magic is. And when I was 5 years old, people like Walt Disney, like Mr. Rogers, like Jim Henson taught me you could use your creativity to put good into this world. And that's all I'm trying to do here today with the I Am books. Whether it's I'm Amelia Earhart, whether it's I'm Abraham Lincoln, or I Am Walt Disney, and I Am Marie Curie, is trying to use my creativity to put good into this world.
Well, you have fans on all sides of the political spectrum, but two former presidents, Bill Clinton and George Bush, certainly have been big fans of Brad Meltzer, and for good reason. And these books, even though they are designed to be readable by children, they are a pleasure for adults as well. And Marie Curie, two Pulitzer Prizes, the first woman to win one, and I believe a family of Pulitzer Prize winners, five in her family. But this was at a time, in her case, when women were not even going to college. How did she achieve what she did?
Yeah, you know, and I think her secret recipe is always, it's the same as Walt Disney's, which is whatever failures you find, you never let it ever, ever stop you. And for her, you know, her sister, they only have money to send one child to college. And her sister was like, you know what, Marie Curie said, you go first. When we have enough money, I'll come too. And she was just determined, wherever she was, that she was still going to study and still going to learn. And I think, you know, even at her own Nobel Prize ceremony, they didn't want her to speak. She won the award. But because she was a woman, they said, you don't want to speak. But the great thing, and the way she was able to persevere, is she always had a new way of looking at things. That's where great discoveries come from. That's where great science comes from. And in fact, Marie Curie, I didn't know this until I researched the book. She used to study uranium, which we all know now, but no one knew back then. And she saw it emitted different rays, and she invented a term for it. She called it radioactivity. That's who invented the term. We got it from Marie Curie, this one little girl who, when she was young, was told, you'll never study science. You'll never be anything. Girls can't be scientists. But again, never, ever let her stop us. We're all so afraid today to have our kids fail. But again, that's the way they learn. That's the way they succeed. That's the way they really fly, like Peter Pan.
These are new editions of the best-selling nonfiction picture book series, Ordinary People Change the World. I am Walt Disney. I am Marie Curie. And Marie Curie was a trailblazer in the first woman to win a Nobel Prize. But you can relate to people who have broken through glass ceilings, if you will. You were, I think you have noted, Brad, the first member of your family to go to a four-year college.
Listen, I grew up and I thought after high school you went to work. And again, nothing wrong with that. That's what I grew up. That's my, you know, I thought that's what happened. And on my first book, when I started to write, I got 24 rejection letters, Jim. There were only 24 publishers. There were only 20 publishers. I got 24 rejection letters, which meant some people were writing me twice to make sure I got the point. But, you know, I said, if they don't like that book, I'll write another. And if they don't like that, I'll write another. And when I look back on the experience, I don't think back and go, well, I was right and they were wrong and ha-ha on them. I think of it like Walt Disney. I think of it like Marie Curie, which is, you know, life is subjective. All you have to do in your life, whether you are a scientist, whether you're a writer, whether you're someone who's going to create cartoons and theme parks, is you just can't let anyone tell you no. Don't let anyone tell you no. And we always put those lessons on the back of the books. Ordinary People Change the World books, this I Am series. On the back of I Am Amelia Earhart, it says, I know no bounds. On the back of I Am Abraham Lincoln, it says, I will speak my mind and speak for others. And on the back of, you know, I Am Marie Curie, it says she knows about the power of discovery. Or I Am Walt Disney saying that he knows that the magic is you. You're the person who makes magic happen. And I think those lessons are what our kids need and our grandkids need and our nieces and nephews need more than ever.
Well, as you note, your first novel garnered, I think, 24 rejection letters. And then the second novel, The Tenth Justice, that has become a book with a life of its own. And your work has been saluted, as I noted, by at least two presidents, and both from different political persuasions. What do you think about the world we're living in right now?
You know, I'll tell you this story, the perfect story to tell about President George Bush, my dear friend who passed away, George H.W. Bush. And right before he died, what no one knew is they were bringing him some of his favorite authors to read to him. And they had asked me to come and read to him, and we knew it was going to happen. He's in Kennebunkport, Maine, and we go into his office, and they wheeled him in there, and the Secret Service left, and it was just me and my wife. It was President Bush and his service dog, Sully, and this was the end, Jim. We knew what was happening. As it's happening, they told us, listen, you're going to read for 10 minutes. He's going to fall asleep. He sleeps a lot these days. And I said, I'd be honored to read even for 10 minutes. And I brought a book that I wrote, an adult nonfiction book called The First Conspiracy, about the secret plot to kill George Washington. And I walk into his office, and a copy of The First Conspiracy, there's a stack of books on his desk about, and one of them is The First Conspiracy. Mm-hmm. and it's dog-eared. He had given me a blurb on it, you know, a year ago, and it looked like it had been read so many times. And I said to him, sir, you want to read this? And he said, mm-hmm, because he couldn't speak at that point. He just would go, you know, mm-hmm or uh-uh. And so I brought the part of the book where George Washington has the Declaration of Independence read to his troops for the first time. And I'm reading through the chapter, and I see him fall asleep, and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to finish the chapter. And I get to that line, Jim, in the book, where we see those words we all know. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. And in that moment, President Bush's eyes pop open, and he just locks on me like a laser. He's wide awake, like he's back again. And I get to the end of the chapter. I say, sir, you want to read another chapter? Mm-hmm. You want to read another? Mm-hmm. I get to the end of another. You want to read another? Mm-hmm. And by the time I'm done, I'm there not for 10 minutes. I'm there for a half hour. And I say goodbye to him. I know I'm never going to see him again. I thank him for so much that he's given me in my life. And I leave there. And I was at the funeral. And when you look at his funeral when he passed, is the word that everyone used to describe President Bush and was this word, decency. One of the most, you know, powerful words. And yes, it was because he was a decent guy, but it was also because I think our culture, to answer your question, is starving for a return to that decency right now. And I think whether it's George Washington, whether it's President Bush, whether it's Abraham Lincoln or Walt Disney or Marie Curie, we right now focus on people who are so loud and say, look at me. And what we need to focus on are the humble ones, the hardworking ones. And if we want to give our kids those values again, we need to find people who are decent again. And so to me, that's kind of where I net out and what I think is wrong with the culture. Right now, we're just so divided, and we need to be united.
Thank you so much, Brad Meltzer. I am Walt Disney. I am Marie Curie. This man's back in a big way. Last year, he had a number one bestseller with The Escape Artist. And this is a continuing part of a series that is worthy of public consumption. Thank you, Brad. And I do want to note, I misspoke at the beginning, Marie Curie won 2 Nobel Prizes, not Pulitzer Prizes. And coming next, we will visit with Tori Fields of Blue Cross, who's affiliated this semester with the Manship School, about end-of-life care.